Hi, everyone. This is Kimberly.
And this is Ethel.
And you're listening to Sitting in a Park Complaining About How Our Dogs Are Barking.
Welcome to Arthritis R Us.
That's terrible.
You're listening to A Date with Dateline.
Great. And who are you?
This is Ethel, formerly known, artist formerly known as Katie.
The artist formerly known as Buck Naked. We are going to hear that phrasing very soon.
I can't wait. This episode is tremendous.
This episode, we need to just start because it's so long.
Yeah.
It felt like a 26-hour marathon episode.
Yeah.
I spent full hour on the recap and then looked at the time code and I was at 13 minutes in.
Right.
Buckle
up.
Mank, how did you do this to us? We didn't even exist back in 2013, but he thought ahead. And he's like, I'm going to torture those young ladies.
I mean, I feel like for Dateline lovers, this is amazing,
but it's very confusing. There are so many people. No, people could not keep track on Twitter. To be fair, the people on Twitter sometimes can't keep track when there's two people on screen. But
that's horrible.
It's true.
Those are your people. Apologize.
They're my people, but they're so busy tweeting that they're like, who is that? Is that the mistress? And you're like, no, that's the mom of the dead person.
Oh, but I get confused. This one throws you for a loop because one person I did honestly think was two people because in two of her interviews, she looks wildly different.
Yeah, that's true. No, she gets a whole glow-up makeover and then returns immediately. She says like two sentences in the makeover and then goes back to her before picture.
So I'm confused. I need explanations on that.
Okay, so this is called A Gathering Storm. It aired on Friday the 15th, 2013.
Hmm.
I don't remember what I was doing in 2013. Probably exactly what I'm doing now.
They
sitting
aired
on
it,
my couch.
They aired it on a Friday the 13th?
No, Friday the 15th.
Oh, that would have been clever if they'd aired it on a Friday the 13th because that's when the murder happens.
Oh, it does?
It did. It happens on a Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that shows how well I paid attention. My notes are great, you guys.
They must be if you spend an hour on 13 minutes. Also, we should mention this is a two-parter. We will be doing half of the recap this evening, half of a recap later. You'll see why. Yeah. And if you've watched the episode, you know why.
Yeah. So this was season 21, episode 23. It's hosted by Sir Baby Mank. I love a Baby Mank. I love
too.
A current Mank. I love who is now just Teenage Mank. There's Baby Mank, and he's currently Teenage Mank. That's how we're aging him. So, first of all, at the beginning, who is doing the voiceover? It is not Lester.
I don't know.
Some dramatic voice that is like in a world.
Yeah, he got his big shot.
He was super excited.
But never again.
The graphics are swooping across the screen.
Oh, yeah.
Like we're watching The Matrix or something.
Yeah, graphics guy's back.
And then it starts with a B-roll sequence that is like a soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
Or a cheesy romance novel come to life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Cinemax movie. These are the shots that you get. You get the red roses blooming in high speeds. A couple kissing in front of the ocean at sunset. There's a really close-up shot of a needle being set gently onto a record that is probably playing Kenny G. The couple is then running through a field, not flying kites, but waving this like large white sheet, like they're going to a picnic or a clan meeting or something.
Wait,
and then it was just
a sheet?
Yes, I thought first it was a kite, it wasn't a kite. Then I thought that might be a picnic blanket, but it's not. It's like a thin white, you would never bring that to a picnic.
They're parachuting. They're doing that parachute game where you all grab corners and you like go up and people run under to the other side. That's
it's just the two of them. They're in a Mommy and Me class?
Yeah.
That's what I think of when I think of that game. It's like a Mommy and Me class.
Have you been to a Mommy and Me class?
When I was a me. When I was a little me.
Oh, Mommy and Me is for kids, too. In my head, like when I was picturing Mommy and Me, I was thinking about it not like an AA meeting, but a little bit more like you sit in chairs and you're all moms and you talk about struggles.
No.
What's that called?
No. That's like a mom support group.
Yeah.
This is mommy and me, which I'm sure some of those talks do happen, but you have your child with you and the children all play and then you talk about being a mom, but you play games with the baby, interacting with the baby in this group setting. You do little dances with the baby and play little games with the baby.
And you make friends with other babies or moms with babies.
Exactly.
And do sometimes the moms try to one-up the other mom? Like, baby Delilah doesn't eat anything purple or anything yellow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Timothy is now rolling onto his back already, or his front, I guess. I guess they're already naturally on their back. I don't know much about babies.
That sounds like a turtle.
That's like a big deal when he rolls over. That's like a big milestone, apparently.
That's
amazing. Okay, so love to the songwriters is many a... splendid thing.
Say that again?
A many splendid thing.
Let's try it again. Love.
Love to the songwriters is many a splendid thing.
Is a many splendor thing.
Love is a many splendid thing.
Something like that. That's why I knew I was saying it wrong.
You don't know the song.
No, I know the song.
Splendored? Splendored.
Okay.
I think there's also a movie.
So Mank tells us this, but then we cut really fast.
Yeah.
The record scratches.
Yep.
And he's like, haha, just kidding. We are actually a commercialist society that has capitalized on love. And it goes to a flower shop, like on Valentine's Day, and they're bustling making flower balloons, and their cash register keeps opening, and they're making bank.
Yeah.
So that's what love has turned into.
Oh, God.
Again, I don't really know what much of this has to do with the actual episode, but it was an entertaining opening.
Yeah.
So then he says, this story is about love's darker side, obsession. Okay, so now we're finally getting somewhere, except is it really? I mean, one lady's for sure obsessed, but...
I forgot he said that. Now I'm sort of like,
What did that have to do with the... Okay, it's fine. He's setting the mood. So the story takes place during Hurricane Charlie of 2004 in Florida. Mark off Florida, your bingo cards. Also, I'm going to release our new bingo cards, and some of them do have horse B-roll, and we get horse B-roll right off the bat.
Do we have a bingo square for, like, a shooting range? Shooting guns?
Yes, yes, I added it. It is new on our new cards.
Okay.
Yes.
I will mark that off my list. Okay.
So, it's in a place in Florida called Punta Gorda, which means fat point.
There we go.
Which is super romantic. It's lovely.
Yeah.
We meet Jean Houghton, and her husband Jim. And he's hiding out somewhere, not from the storm, but because he was scared of something. And we will tell you in 3.5 hours why he is scared. So after the storm, Jean and Jim meet up. And they are upset, again, not over all the devastation that has occurred in their beloved hometown, but of the personal storm that is brewing inside their lives. And Mank is being so vague, and we just don't know what's happening. I was getting angry. Then we find there's a homicide investigation going on at the same time during the hurricane, and a detective, Mark Chumper? Clumper? Mm. Chump?
A detective, Mark.
Okay. I think it's Chumper. I'm chomping at the bit.
Chompers.
Chomps. Okay.
Chompleys.
Detective Chompley is chasing a murderer through the hurricane, basically.
Yeah.
That's how they make it seem.
It's dramatic.
We still have no idea what's going on. So then we rewind, and it started in Washington State in 2003 with a body found in an abandoned car. Russell Douglas, a ragged hole between his eyes that had frozen his age at 32. It did make me think of last week where we couldn't figure out how they couldn't find the bullet holes. This was like a clear situation where they knew he was shot right away.
It was a ragged hole.
Yeah. So he's wearing flip-flops with socks.
Mm.
So the murder isn't the only thing tragic that happened that day.
Oh my gosh.
Chumpley says when he tells Russell's wife, Brenna, she doesn't seem surprised. It seemed kind of matter of fact. So she's right away on their radar.
And she's this is in Washington, nothing to do with the Florida Jim Jeans.
Correct.
Okay.
So they, Jim Jeans.
Henceforth, Jim and Jean will be called Jim Jeans.
Yeah. So she's a suspect. They were separated at the time. They had two kids. The detective is working this case for months. He finds a number in Russell's phone that leads to a Las Vegas number for a woman named Peggy Thomas, who, when he talks to, says, oh, I'm just friends with Brenna and Russell. No big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. So we still don't know nothing about her. Then we hear the longest segment of every member of Russell's family finding out that he has been killed.
It was long.
It was long. And we find out how each one of them found out. But this is the moment I remember from this episode, because I've seen this episode before. And all I remember is this scene.
Okay.
Russell's mom finds out. She finds out Russell's gone. And Mank's voiceover says, gone? Gone where? To heaven, Mank. And Russell's sister, I'm not going to say anything about her shaved hairstyle.
No, you're not. But
I do think, I bet Russell's mom, who's adorable, but a little square maybe, was like, honey, why did you have to shave your head right before Dateline interview?
I think no. You I think the mom is like, you do you. I think she's a good you. Mom.
I loved mom. The mom.
Yeah.
Mom was great. Russell's dad is in the wild hunting and can't be reached by phone. So an Alaskan bush pilot has to like fly into the wilderness and say, your son's been killed. And the dad says, which son? Okay.
His response was amazing. Well, my first question was, which son? And I was like, oh my, this is terrible.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter. They would be sad either way.
Yeah. But
I guess he wanted accuracy first.
Oh my gosh.
So then Russell's brother, who was on vacation in Canada snowboarding, because this family is the most active family ever seen.
And they're like, all not together.
My family would literally, if they had to notify us, they were all on the couch, sir. I found them all on the couch.
Yeah.
Joni was at 24-hour fitness right down the street. She came right back. Like
they were all watching Love Island.
Yeah. We haven't started yet. But brother is out of range and doesn't get the messages until he drives across the border into the U.S. And that's the moment I remember where he says his phone was having a seizure when it got so many messages. Maybe he had didn't have an international plan on his phone. Because I know there is still cell service in Canada by the border.
I think you can choose not to have it. Like, if he was on vacation, maybe he was like, I'm good.
I just need to hear. Okay.
Yeah.
So the whole family goes to stay with Brenna and support her, which I thought was very nice. But very nice. I do not know if I personally would want my in-laws sleeping on the floor in the living room, which they were camped out to help me.
I don't know. We didn't get to meet anyone from Brenna's family. So maybe this family is like Brenna's family.
I don't know how much family Brenna had. They didn't really say. Yeah. And I guess Brenna wasn't doing much but hiding in her room. So the mom, who we love, took charge and was like, okay, here's where we're going to get our meals. We're going to put them in Tupperware. We'll have something to eat every day. Here's we're going to plan things, you know.
Well, they had to plan a funeral, right?
Exactly. And Brenna wasn't doing crap. So
Come on,
Russell had been what Mank calls a late bloomer. And as he's saying this, he's showing yearbook photos of Russell with his glasses. And I thought, was that shade?
I don't know why they had to tell us that he was what is a late bloomer? What did it have to do with anything? There's a follow-up.
He didn't become a ladies' man until his 20s.
But is that something that happens? So if you're a late bloomer as a boy, that's something that you go a little wild in your 20s when you
maybe. Some people do. That's what you said about Seth MacFarlane with absolutely no knowledge of his life.
I did. I said that?
Yes. You said he's the type of guy who was nerdy in high school. And then when he got rich and famous, he just went wild with ladies. Again, no knowledge.
I'm not sure if I stand by that. I half and half stand by that.
You said it, so you better stand by it.
I don't know if it made it to the episode.
It did, because people responded in force.
Oh, and said, shut your mouth, Katie. Shut your filthy
they
mouth. They
generally agreed with you that I should not marry him. That was the general consensus.
Good. It's also not on the table currently, right?
No, it's not like he's offered or I've even met him.
Yeah.
Now, Russell had married Brenna and they had two kids, but they fought about money all the time. And he was also cheating on her constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Brenna says their fights weren't physical, although she hit him a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
They finally separate. He moved out. He got a new girlfriend. But because of all the drama with Brenna, the family and Russell weren't really talking, and I kind of don't blame them because Mank says the drama was exhausting, and we all know people who have those relationships, and it's just exhausting to be around. You're like, break up or stay together. I don't care at this point. I can't deal with it.
I've been that person.
I wasn't going to say that.
I've already apologized to you, and I'll apologize again publicly if you'd like.
No, I wasn't even referring to you.
/ Agatha. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I love Agatha.
Agatha and Ethel.
Yeah. But things were looking up for Russell. He was taking an online master's degree course, which sounds like a scam that Peggy Hill got.
Can you do
caught
that?
Into? Like, I guess it's a real thing. It's not like you can be a doctor with four payments of $59.99. I don't know. I guess it's real.
Hmm.
I was not aware.
Okay.
Is it like University of Phoenix, where you do it through them, and then, like, that's a real degree, but a master's degree. Okay, good for you.
In what? Like, in being a jeweler?
I don't know.
Stuff that you can, I don't know what you would have a online, because you couldn't be science.
Right.
You can't be, like, a chemist master's degree.
No, that wouldn't make sense, no. We have lots of questions. So, boats. Right around Christmas, goats?
Goats, or boats.
Goats I feel like boats, they would not be able to monitor your boating time because you're on the computer. So you could just be like, yeah, here's my pictures. I did my work study at the boat place.
So maybe
I did my 40 hours.
More accurate, and you have to have a goat in home.
On the video chat with you, with your professor.
Veterinary science goat specialty. I don't know. All right.
I don't understand how this would work. It must be other things.
Yeah.
Okay. So right around Christmas, Russell had called his brother saying he wanted to get back together with Brenna.
Mm.
Why now?
Mm.
Sounds like the worst marriage in history until we get to the next couple in this episode. So Russell's family didn't think that Brenna had anything to do with it. Russell's mom even helped Brenna get a lawyer. Their finances were in trouble. Brenna was a hairdresser. We just had a hairdresser last week.
Brenna owned the hair salon? Hair salon owner.
Okay.
Yes.
It still doesn't explain her hairstyle.
In a fancy shopping center.
Okay.
They made a point.
Like a strip mall or like a
It looked like a nice shopping center. It had brick.
Oh, well, that makes it fancy. But they still were having financial trouble.
Yeah.
Russell had had life insurance for over $500,000, though. Brenna needed the money because they had been renting a house from a client at the hair salon.
Employee.
Are you sure?
Yeah. She worked there for a while.
I thought she was a mechanic and a beauty pageant person. It's so confusing. Okay, so Brenna is renting the house from this lady, Peggy Thomas. Who is Peggy?
But that's the phone call. The Las Vegas phone number.
Yes. But why is she involved? Okay.
We're going to have to do a flowchart on this.
Seriously.
So who you need to remember right now are Russell and Brenna married.
Russell's dead. It's very sad.
Peggy was the call that they found on his phone. I'm sure he had many calls on his phone, but for some reason they kept focused on this Las Vegas number, which belonged to Peggy, who doesn't live in Las Vegas. She lives in the Washington town and possibly works at the hair salon.
And owns the house.
Yeah,
that they're renting from. Okay. Detective Chumpley is investigating.
It's not his name.
Chumper. I liked it. I wanted it to be Chumper. I did not put on the subtitles to see if I was right. Brenna had an alibi, even though she's the only one with a motive. Then Chumper's partner, Mike Beach. So we have Beach and Chumper, homicide detectives.
Hmm.
Or would it be Chumper and Beach?
Yeah, Chumper and
Beach. Beat cops.
Chump and Beach. I mean, he goes by Chump, right?
Beach and the Chumps. That would be their TV show.
There you go. Or their band.
Oh, God.
As we're coming to.
We'll get to that. So Beach gets a call from an informant, someone scared to say what they know about this murder. Mm-hmm. So he tries to get him talking, and the caller says, there's a girlfriend of the shooter that you need to look at, Also, the shooter is my best friend, and we're in a band together. Jim Hewden is the name of the shooter. He's the guy from the beginning who was hiding out from the storm.
Jim Jeans.
Jim Jeans. So Beach Googles Jim Hewden and finds a photo of the band and tells the guy on the phone, who still won't say his name, yeah, I think I'm looking at a photo of you right now. And the caller goes, wow, you're good.
That's rough. Beach goes,
no, I just like, I Googled it. Have you ever got, do you know what Google? I mean, it's 2013. Yeah. I wish he had said, I just asked Jeeves.
Beach is like super down to earth. Beach is a good, just kind of laughing about it. But that was dirty pool, Beach. To tell that story. That makes him look, that makes
the friend, the caller, look about 99.
Yeah.
And
Bill. Bill's the friend.
Bill's the friend.
Bill Hill, which I can't.
Is it really Bill Hill?
It is Bill Hill.
So, yeah, he's like, I asked Google, and it's not that hard. Okay, so then we jump to Florida. We're now in Florida, where Ponce de Leon came to Florida.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
And then Meg proceeds to tell us about this conquistador. And we're like, where is this episode going? It's so confusing. He came looking for the Fountain of Youth in Florida. Like the conquistador, Jim Hewden was a middle-aged wanderer. There's the tie-in.
That was the only tie-in, though.
There's the tie-in.
That was a long discoverer journey to get to. I mean, all right.
But Mank is a poet. He has to weave these tales. He has 2 hours to work with.
That is true.
Weave a tapestry.
But I guarantee you Ponce de Leon would have been the first thing cut if they had to cut it down to an hour.
Definitely.
But when's the last time you thought about that? When's the last time you heard that name?
Well, I hear it all the time on Seinfeld because they're constantly going to see a movie about Ponce de Leon. It's like an ongoing joke.
Okay, but for the rest of the world, sixth grade. Sixth grade history. The last time. Or like seventh grade, maybe.
I don't even remember history. So he had a computer shop, Jim, not Ponce de Leon. I don't think they had computers back then. Jim has a computer shop in town. Everyone loves him. But more importantly, he's in a band called, wait for it.
No.
Buck Naked and the Exhibitionists. Now, exhibitionists is spelled with an X, as in it starts with an X. Mm-hmm. They're called BNX for short.
Yeah.
I have so many questions. Were they the American version of Bare Naked Ladies? Is one of them specifically Buck Naked and the others are the exhibitionists? Or is this a Hootie and the Blowfish thing where they're kind of all the Blowfish?
Yeah, they just wanted a clever name. But it feels like Jim is like the head of the band, right?
He's not the lead singer, though.
He's not. But it seems like they pull in a ringer for the lead singer. The lead singer is not in a bunch of the band pictures, which means that I think there's a band and then they have singers come in. Maybe sometimes they have that guy for a long time and then they go with someone else. Then they go with someone else because that guy was not in the pictures a lot.
Interesting.
And he was kind of famous. Not like, I mean, but he was in a big band. He was in the Platters.
He was in the Platters, which would give you an idea of how old the members of this band are. Because the way we're going to be talking about the activities of this band, you would think they were just out of college.
Yeah, no,
D-bags. Trying to get their just hunt and scooch all over town. And they are actually middle-aged people in their 40s and 50s.
If you're an Office fan, you're looking at Scrantonicity 2.
There you go.
Scrantonicity 2, but no weddings. I don't think they would do a wedding unless... I think they're a little bit bigger than weddings.
I think that they played at Jim Jean's wedding.
Definitely played at a Jim Jean's wedding. At members of the band, sure. But I think that they were playing more at like city events, festival.
They were pretty popular.
Around. Yeah.
But the town is pretty small, I think.
Also, I'm thinking this whole place just feels like... what's it called? Puerto Pointa? Punta Gorda? Punta Gorda, to me, sounds a lot like Key West.
Yes.
Is it in Key West?
I don't know, but that's a great... It seems like these concerts are like the kind the Beach Boys would put on, but like smaller scale. But the clientele, the ladies who would go and flash their boobies, were like the kind of ladies that would go to...
That we saw in New Orleans.
The exact ladies that we saw in New Orleans on Bourbon Street and made all of the actual like frat boys look so depressed.
Yeah, they all teach together at the same high school. And then they went down to New Orleans for their crazy weekend.
Also, isn't being buck naked, doesn't that sort of make you an exhibitionist? It's kind of redundant.
It's clever. It's all right. It's perfect for what they are. It's absolutely perfect.
One of the guys looks like Mario Batali, by the way, without the orange Crocs and the sexual assault. The other name for the band, the other possible choice, was Less More and the Contradictions. And Mank is delighted by this. If he had a vote, he would have picked this one. The band members say, well, Jim came up with both of these names. And that just shows his mind, how brilliant it was. And I was like, does it?
Yeah.
They're not that... I guess they're funny. Like, I wouldn't go, he's brilliant. He came up with Less More and the Contradictions.
Look, we've seen worse. We've heard worse. It's just, again, it's just right for what this is.
Yes. Okay. You're totally right.
Because it's like Scrantonicity. It's a play on words, right?
You're totally right. So Jim is a partier and doesn't let girlfriends or wives come in the way of a good time. Okay. There's so much cheating happening in this episode. I feel like this episode is giving me Hep C. I can't.
Wow.
Now, there's one guy who helps Jim cheat. He is Jim's wingman. He's like 65. And so it's weird that he's his wingman.
He does seem a lot older. Yeah.
He's so much older. And I know this happened in 2003, but he looks like 70 something now. Or so he was maybe 50 something when he was the wingman with all the groupies.
Yeah, you know they had groupies, too. You know this is like a Duke Silver situation.
Oh, I got that reference.
And especially with the music. And you know that their ballad was You've Lost That Love and Feeling. You know they played it every single time, and the ladies swooned, and then somebody's husband got cheated on.
But I think maybe it's like a badge of honor in Punta Gorda to have your wife cheat on you with one of the members of...
Of BMX?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they got me, too. That's what they do, man. That's what they do. And then they high-five each other. Yeah, it's
gross. Extra.
Yeah. Okay. So this guy is Jim's wingman. His name is Bill. And they pick up chicks and they cover for each other so they don't get in trouble with their girlfriends. They play classic songs and there's one song that they're playing that's like a series of numbers that I didn't know. Like 6712439.
It's a famous song.
Yeah, I felt like my social security number. By the way, if anyone thinks it's 8675309, I do know that song. That was not what this song is. It's a different song.
Yeah.
The lead singer is the guy from the Platters. At this time, they might rotate. Anyways, Jim eventually marries Gene. Gene is in love with him. How do we say this?
Gene runs his computer store?
He turns over the computer store to her because the band is doing so well. But I didn't really understand the connection, and they don't really explain it further. But all you need to know is that Gene is beyond obsessed in love with Jim. Mm-hmm. Does not care what he's doing. She will love him forever. Now, they are married for a very short amount of time when Jim goes to a funeral in Washington and meets a lady named Peggy Thomas. Finally, we're going to get to find out who Peggy is. Yeah. Peggy is a wannabe hairstylist. There we go. She was a stylist. You're right. And in beauty pageants. And they announce her as Miss Washington. But before you think it's like in the Miss USA, it's in a Las Vegas smaller beauty pageant that she was.
Yeah, that we don't get the name of.
Miss Washington.
But the music is Pageant City. I couldn't describe it. It was great.
But they do keep referring to her as Miss Washington in the episode. And it's like, okay, but that sort of implies it's Miss USA or something. You know what I'm saying? Miss America.
And it's like, not, right? We're sure it's not.
I'm positive they said it's a Las Vegas beauty pageant.
Okay. I don't understand what it is. Wait a minute. So he met Peggy at the funeral in Washington.
Correct.
For his childhood friend.
Correct.
Got it.
Now, Peggy also has a lot of headshots of herself, wearing a look that can only be described as 90s cowboy chic.
90s cowboy sultry.
There you go. We then meet another lady. And why are they having us meet another lady? Because I'm so confused. This lady is Leslie. And she was on a reality show called Big Rich Texas, which seems like a Style Network ripoff of Real Housewives, right?
No, I think it's one of those Bravo shows. They do shows like that.
It was on Style Network.
They have. Oh, it was on Style.
Well, that's what the icon was in the corner.
Maybe. Oh, then it's Style. It's exactly. It's like one of those Married to Medicine or whatever, like all those other like side shows that Bravo has that's not Housewives, but like Housewives.
So Leslie is blonde, kind of Barbie doll or a Dixie chick or something. She has one winged side of her hair, like Farrah Fawcett on one side. I found that a little odd. Anyways, she loves Peggy. Yeah. Everyone loves Peggy, but she really loves Peggy.
Peggy seems to have a pull.
Yeah.
With people.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got some sort of charm thing going on. And then she's also very pretty.
So Peggy, they met during pageants. And Peggy also a mechanic. And somehow that added to her sex appeal to Leslie. But also because Peggy was a whole lot of gorgeous woman.
Yeah.
So that's Leslie says she is sex appeal. She's a whole lot of gorgeous woman.
Yeah.
And then she says Peggy is voluptuous.
Yeah.
Which is not the word, but that's okay.
Oh, she did say that, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
She said volump with an M?
100% with an M.
So voluptuous. Okay, that's all right. I think Peggy is very tall. From what I'm gathering, Peggy's like 5'11 and like not a pixie stick. She
looked normal, thin beauty pageant girl to me, though. Her chesticles looked normal size. So I don't think she's using the word right.
I think she looked on the curvier side of pageant.
Well,
she's not a stick.
Leslie is like a size 0. And Peggy might be a size 4. So that is voluptuous.
Yeah. In the pageant circuit, sure. We don't know.
Sure.
I don't know what happens. But
sure. Now, Jean knows that there's this lady Peggy that is in Jim's life. But Jim convinces her that it's just a business contact in the music industry.
How does she find out about Peggy? How's the first
she way? She sees some emails or some text messages. And then one time Peggy actually calls the house for Jim.
Peggy is nothing if not brazen.
And Jean is nothing if not head in the sand.
Yeah, kinda. Well.
So Jim's behavior is getting out of control. He's drinking a ton. He keeps traveling out west for no reason. Mm-hmm. And this woman is calling, but Jean is like, nope, he's not cheating. He's in a band called Buck Naked and the Exhibitionist, for crap's sake. He's not a cheater.
No.
He has a reputation of chasing tail all over Punta Gorda. But he's loyal to me.
Punta Gorda cannot be what that's called.
Yes, it is.
That sounds...
It sounds inappropriate.
It sounds like a bad word.
Yeah.
En español.
Yeah.
As Peggy Hill would say.
Well, gorda means fat.
Yeah, it's the other one.
Punta. You sound like a Clovis?
No, isn't that...
Maybe. Okay. It's a classy town. But this is Punta, which means point.
Yeah, which sounds like... Punta.
It does sound like Punta a little. Jim is chasing Punta all over Punta Gorda.
See, and that doesn't sound wrong. That doesn't sound wrong. That sounds right. Oh, sweet Lord. All right. Okay.
Okay. Mank throws so much shade here at poor Gene.
Yeah.
Because he says, there is, of course, no cure for willful blindness.
Come on, I know, Mank. We know.
We know. But I really wish he had segued into like an ad and been like, but for unwillful blindness, please support the Braille Institute or consider donating to Helping Hands for the Blind.
Oh, God.
What that is.
And then number scrolls across the bottom.
Exactly. Oh, Lord. That's what I was expecting.
No, because that just makes Jean look even worse. It just makes her look even worse. Okay.
Speaking of segueing gracefully into ads.
Oh, my.
If you're stressed because your bandmate wants to call your new band Buck Naked and the Exhibitionist, but you really prefer the name Less More in the Contradictions, we have a great offer for you. BetterHelp Counseling with a licensed therapist in the privacy and safe space of your own home. You can confidentially text, chat, phone, or video with a counselor. It's available worldwide, so our listeners in Japan that are stressed because of all of the robots that are going to take over the world, they can enjoy this service too. BetterHelp has counselors that are specialized in family issues, anxiety, grief. If you don't like your counselor for any reason, you can switch to a new one at no additional charge. It's very affordable, and if you qualify, they even offer financial aid. Date with Dateline listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code DATELINE. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/dateline. You fill out the questionnaire and they assess your needs and they get you matched with the counselor that you'll love. betterhelp.com/dateline. You might have issues like Jean and you don't even know it.
Check it out, guys.
Back to the cheating.
Ugh.
Jim's 80-year-old wingman.
Stop. It's not his fault. He just might look old. They've been living hard.
That's true. They were rode wet and put out to dry. What's that expression?
I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to remember it. This is the second time I will have to tell you that expression. But they honestly, when they every single B-roll shot they show of that band,
yeah,
they look, every single one looks drunk. Those 1,000%. Men are drinking, like drinking.
Yes. Jim's wingman would go with him on these trips to visit Peggy,
yeah,
and was
weird.
Helping him hide it from Jean. So Bill. That's a good friend. Bill, what are you doing? This is not the first time Bill is complacent, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the band is starting to see these changes in Jim. He's drinking a lot. He has this erratic temper. And then we find out that Jean heard from Jim, he confided in her, that his deep, dark secret is not the incessant cheating and the over-the-top drinking. It's the fact that he has always wanted to know what it was like to kill a man.
Now, how drunk was Jim when he had this conversation with Jean?
No more than usual.
What would you do if I told you that?
If I was Jean, I would say at least he's sleeping in my bed tonight. That's all Jean did.
Yeah, kind of. But what would you do? Seriously, what would you do if I confessed that to you?
I don't know. Can you force someone into counseling?
I was going to say,
Can I call BetterHelp?
You tell me to get BetterHelp. There we go.
Can I do that? Can I buy you a gift certificate to BetterHelp? Because I know you're more likely to use it if it's a gift certificate.
I think anyone's more likely to use things that are gift certificates.
Yeah, that's true. Now, Jim had seen his mom getting abused when he was a kid in a domestic violence situation. And he had always wanted to get revenge on that man. But that man was dead. So Jim wanted to get revenge on a man that was like that man. It's like every episode of Criminal Minds, the killer is not killing the person that they want to be killing. The killer is always killing a substitute. It's like a role-playing.
Really?
Yes, it's like a role-playing game. And that person is like the substitute. They call it a different word for the person, like a representation of what happened to them when they were younger. And then they kill that person. Who usually didn't do anything wrong. They just happened to be the representation of that person.
Boy.
Yeah. So Jean is like, well, he's with me this month. It's not Peggy's month. So I'm sticking with him. But then all of a sudden, right when she decides she's maybe had enough, she gets this massive makeover, seemingly right in the middle of her interview with Mank. It's like they cut Jean, Mank, Jean, Mank, and then they cut back to Jean, and she now has, like, darkish red hair. She's wearing a suit. And then they cut back to Mank, and then they cut back to Jean, and she's has the blonde hair again. It is the weirdest thing. It's, like, inserted in there. I thought she was a shapeshifter.
And we get it more at the end. We get dark hair Jean.
Once more at the end. Or maybe a couple times more.
I think we get her a couple times more at the end.
Yeah, so it's just one of these in the first
hour. So it's obviously years later, but she answered the question better the second time?
Maybe, I don't know.
They thought we wouldn't notice? Because I thought it was a different person. I was like,
right.
Who's that?
Yeah, because they literally cut right back to her in the normal blonde, rougher Jean that we have come to know and not really respect. But
that's terrible. We could have had a voiceover.
Yeah. It was just not even clear that it was a... I think they have a B-roll shot of the new Jean walking, but it really made it seem to me it felt like it was the same interview. She's like Tonks from Harry Potter. She can just...
Yeah.
So, because it's weird, because she's talking about finally being done with Jim, and she looks great. Like, she's released him. She's dyed her hair, she got a new outfit, and then... And she's dropped Jim. He's But then we find out she didn't really drop him. He dropped her because he went to go live with Peggy in Las Vegas with her two kids. Apparently, Peggy has two kids. So Jean's glow up is short-lived. Yeah. She somehow switches immediately back to her before picture, and she's taking Jim back because he says he's coming home from Vegas soon.
Wow.
And she's like, great, I get my husband back.
Also, what is Peggy living in Washington or living in Vegas?
Vegas now. Now she's in Vegas, yeah.
Okay, Peggy moves around a lot. Okay.
Peggy gets around a lot. So then, guess what? Jim does not keep his promise to move back home to Punta. He stays in Vegas. And so what does Jean do? She goes to visit him in Vegas, where he's living with his mistress and her two kids.
Well, she said he set it up, like, for her 40th birthday. He, like, flew her out, made a big deal about it.
Yes, but she knew that's where he was living. Yeah, with Peggy.
Jean, you gotta move on, girl. You gotta let him go. He's with Peggy now. And Peggy,
I have a bunch of self-esteem books that I can recommend for you.
Girl, the band wasn't that good.
No, Jim is not that talented. It's not like you're following around Jim Morrison or something. He's in a little band in Punta Gorda. Get over it. And so what really bothers her is not the fact that she's now visiting him in the town that is Peggy's, or that the drinks are watered down in Vegas. It's that Jim tells her he intends to actually follow through with his dream, follow your bliss, of killing a man.
Okay.
So that's a happy trip to Vegas, too, for her birthday.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill a man.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. So this man that he's found beats his family, and by killing him, Jim would symbolically be able to kill the man that abused his mom.
Right.
Which is cool and all, except that that man is Russell, and we all know that Russell never hit Brenna. Brenna actually hit Russell a few times.
Brenna of Russell.
I'm going to start referring to everyone by Handmaiden's Tale. Brenna had offered to share the insurance money with Peggy if Peggy had her boyfriend, Jim, kill her husband, Russell.
Who's telling us this?
Jean.
Okay. We're just learning this story all out of order. Okay.
Yeah, this is what Jean has been told from Jim.
That Peggy's going to be able to... Why would Jean care if Peggy gets money?
Well, she wouldn't. She's not in favor of this plan, but she doesn't... She can't be away from her man if he goes to jail, so she doesn't care. She's not going to say anything. Okay. Now, Jean is the master of denial and also doesn't think that he's going to go through with it. I mean, he broke his promise to come back home to Florida and stay with her. Instead, he stayed with Peggy. So he'll probably break the promise about killing the guy, too. He's just Jim. He's all talk. He's not going to actually kill someone. He's cheated on me for years. Of course he's not going to kill someone.
Oh.
So one day, Jim calls Jean, saying that dreams do come true. He had killed someone. Which is bad, but he's coming back to Florida to be with her. Yay, Jean.
Why?
She's so excited.
Why is he coming back to Florida after he's a dream is a wish your heart makes? Why?
Maybe he felt like he had to physically be separated from Peggy after the murder so no one would get suspicious of anything. And he should be as far away from the murder scene as possible.
Okay.
Is that? I don't know.
That's all right. I'll take that. I was wondering. That's a good reason, actually. All right.
But Jean is upset that her husband killed someone, but she's more excited that her long game has paid off and he's coming home to her.
Her long waiting game.
Yes. Great. And
what's happening at the computer store? Who's there?
No one. Who's running the computer store? They probably have like an intern who is in like her first year of junior college. And she's like, I don't know. My bosses are crazy, you guys. He's never in town. She just looks at a picture of him and writes Mrs. Jean Jim over and over again on her little Lisa Frank binder. So we get nothing done at the computer store.
Also, the mayor used to go there. I mean, it was a big deal because we got an interview
for two seconds
with the mayor.
Yeah, the mayor of
Punta. For 2 seconds, who was touting how great the computer store was and how good Jim was at computers. They could build you a computer, which I would feel like is the point of a computer store.
Yeah, no, but Jim's a genius. Remember, he came up with the names of those bands, and he can fix a computer. He's a genius.
Why did we need that interview with the mayor?
To show that the mayor is easily impressed.
Okay.
I met this mechanic, and he fixed my car. I gave him the key to the city. Okay. Jim tells Jean, I've killed this man. Mm-hmm. Jean's first question to her husband is, are you okay? This is what your first concern is. Are you okay?
Someone else is not okay.
Someone else is not okay. Someone else's family is very much not okay. They were all skiing and hunting in the wilderness, and they had to find out, and it was terrible. Mm. And they're collecting hot dishes from everyone in town. Because they have a funeral to plan.
They don't do hot dish in Washington.
I bet they do. It's cold.
I feel like they do baked goods, maybe? Like muffins?
Maybe.
Cinnamon rolls?
Oh, sounds
pudding?
Delightful.
Banana pudding? Like a
oh.
Pudding. Okay.
Does Jean turn him in, Katie? Do you think, from what you've learned of Jean, that she turns in Jim?
No.
No.
I think Jean, Tammy Wynette's it, stands by... Mm-hmm. And makes another bad decision in a series of really, really bad decisions. And there's more to come. There's more bad decisions to come.
So many more decisions that Jean makes that are as questionable as, I'm not going to say anything about anyone's hair.
Good.
Now, she is just thrilled that he's home, but he's not as happy as he should be, considering he fulfilled his lifelong dream of killing someone. He says the buzz was amazing for a few days, but then it wore off. He was walking on sunshine, and then the high went away. That's when you have to kill again. Exactly.
That's how serial killers are born. Where have you been, Jim? Yeah.
Jean. So Jean does nothing. Months go by until guess who shows up at the door? Peggy. Peggy pops up in this story like every 20 minutes, I think. It'll go on and we'll learn about other people's lives. And then, oh yeah, Peggy's here.
She's the personification of
Aunt Peggy, which you won't get. But it's really a funny joke that I just made.
What's it from?
It's from Hamilton. And there's two sisters. And the third one's always like, Aunt Peggy! Because the two ones are the main ones. So the ladies are now meeting face to face. Peggy and Jean. It's a standoff in Punta. And they sit down and probably have some Coronas or something. And, they're not lemonade people. This is Corona City. And
hard lemonade?
Maybe. Mike's hard lemonade. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're chatting at the house, and they are realizing that Jim has been playing both of them. I don't know how they did not see this before. And he has been telling each of them that it was over with the other one, which makes no sense because he has been actively flying back and forth between them.
This is the most difficult long-distance relationship. It's clear across the United States. This is the hardest way to have an affair that you could possibly have an affair.
Unless they lived in, Australia.
Yeah. Peggy must be, a magician. She's a witch.
She
casts a spell. She's like that one Kelly from whatever that episode was, that we were pretty convinced that she had, powers.
Oh, that Kelly. Kelly and Ira.
Yeah, black hair Kelly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, they start fighting. Jim comes back home. They call Jim. He's at a radio station doing an interview. And she's like, your mistress is here. I totally knew about her, but now she's in my house, so I can't ignore her, basically. And so Jim comes home. He's been caught, and they're all yelling at each other. He decides, I'm going to stay with Jean, my wife. Peggy
leaves.
That's
surprising.
So surprising. Does he keep his word? We'll find out. Now,
I have a theory on this. I think he trusts Jean more than he trusts Peggy.
Definitely. And he should.
Yeah, Jean and there's a murder.
Yes, there's a... Yeah. You're right. But they both know about the murder. So if he trusts Jean to not tell his secret more than he trusts Peggy, then he should stay with Peggy. Because he shouldn't want to piss off the one that he doesn't trust to turn him in. Don't you think? But he doesn't. He's not that smart. Okay. So even though he's a genius and can fix a computer.
Genius.
Yeah.
Genius.
Oh, God. Okay. So Peggy leaves. She's not gone for long.
No.
Much like herpes. She comes right back and shows up at a band gig that they're doing. And we're talking to Bill, the wingman, and we find out that, guess what else the wingman knew? He knew that Jim had killed this man for Peggy.
Bum, bum.
Yeah. And guess what? He also did nothing for 5 months. Did not tell anyone. Why are people so loyal to this man? I don't get it. I don't see it. It's not coming through in the photos, the charisma or whatever.
I don't think you understand island living is going to be the biggest problem. Feeling hot, hot, hot. There's something that goes down on Punta Gorda Island, inlet, whatever it is. It is on the water. There's a code. Mm. We don't know the code. And it might just be unspoken, but it's a code. You do
Instead
not
of a
betray.
Bro code, it's a gym code.
Yeah, you don't betray your island brother. And that's what they're doing.
You're talking like they're like native island people. These are people, like white people with sunburns, drinking.
They're all really sunburned all the time, by the way. I can't tell if it's red from alcohol or red from sun or a combination of both. Where's the sunscreen?
People. No, they don't know about sunscreen, and it shows because they all could be easily 20 years younger than what they look like.
It's very strange.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
So finally, the wingman, Bill, listens to his conscience and he calls the police.
So now here's the phone call.
He's the band member who was so impressed with Google.
Yeah. So he must have told, Jim must have given him a lot of information for him to even be able to call the right police department. I'm surprised Jim went into so much detail. Like, he was in this town in Washington.
That's
this
true.
This is where it happened.
You
know what
I'm
saying?
He did know the town. You're totally right, though. Yeah, he knew the town has a funny name. I didn't write it down. Town in Washington. So he did.
Oh, yeah.
He knew the
Sicily?
Name, too.
No.
So the detective flies to Florida and meets with the wingman and verifies his story. Then the detective goes to Jim's house and says, Jim, I know you killed Russell. And instead of like, who's Russell? Russell's dead?
Yeah.
Why is there a cop from Washington in my house?
Yeah.
He says, I don't know why anyone would say that. Which is the classic non-denial. When a killer doesn't say, I didn't do it, they say, I would never do it. I would never do something like that.
Exactly.
He says, I don't know why anyone would say that. He does admit that he was in Washington and did briefly meet Russell. And he admits that he is a son of a bee. He says,
several times,
I'm not a killer, I'm just a son of a bee. But he thinks it's charming.
It is almost charming the way he does it. He goes, look, I'm a son of a bee. I'm a son of a bee, but I'm no killer. The way he does it is very, like, kind of island smooth.
You were drawn into it?
No, but I got it. You know what I wrote down? I said, it looks like he thinks he's in a movie.
Yes.
That's a movie line.
He's been practicing.
Something that he's been thinking. And he maybe didn't practice it out loud, but it's something he's been thinking about in his head.
I would say. Yeah.
I'm going to be man-to-man with these cops. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm going to say. Look, I'm a bad guy. I've done all this bad stuff, but I'm no killer. Right. That's a movie thing, right?
Who does he think is going to play him in the movie?
Clint Eastwood.
No, he's too old. I mean, he's not that too old because they're all pretty old. Matthew McConaughey?
Oh, yes. Oh my God, he totally thinks Matthew McConaughey. That's perfect.
That's who he thinks will play him.
I'm no killer.
Just keep living. All right, all right.
All right, all right.
Now, Peggy is being interviewed at the same time in Las Vegas. She is not admitting to anything. They tell Jim, we've been talking to your wingman, and Jim gets a little nervous, and he runs his fingers through his hair. Which I think is
really long at this point. His hair is like Jesus.
It's like Patrick Swayze in Point Break. And I think running his fingers through his hair is his tell. That's like, oh, I'm nervous. I'm running my fingers through my hair.
Sweaty hands. Yeah.
So then Hurricane Charlie hits. And the wingman is terrified that Jim is going to come and get him for revenge. So he has no power. The power's all out. The town's being destroyed. It's terrible. And he's sleeping with a gun under his pillow because he thinks Jim is going to come get him.
I would be scared that Jim was coming to get me.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
But I can't figure it out totally, like these motivations. Like maybe if he had the urge to kill again, but he doesn't even seem like that. He seems like he just is kind of like laissez-faire about the whole thing.
I like that word.
So the storm hits and then finally it settles down. This is the storm, the gathering storm. This is what this episode has all been about, apparently, except not really.
They try to do the through line of the storm, but really you could have just changed the name of the episode because they're like, they keep going on about like Hurricane Charlie. I don't remember Hurricane Charlie, but I don't know how old I was, but like, was it a big storm or was it like, was it massive devastation?
It did look like massive devastation, but it was so long ago. Like, we probably wouldn't remember it from being in Florida. It wasn't as, like, maybe popular a hurricane as Katrina. And I don't mean popular like yay. I mean, like, we all knew about it. But also, Charlie is spelled differently, I think. At least that's how they spell it on one of the graffiti. It's L-E-Y. Yeah. Which is sassy, like a name of a Disney show, Charlie.
Or it makes me think it's a lady.
Yeah. Oh.
Thanks, guys.
Hurricanes are always ladies.
Oh.
Hurricanes are always women names.
Why?
That's just how they do.
No, because this one says Francis, Ivan, and Jean.
Oh, maybe they go back and forth.
Three hurricanes.
Maybe they go back and forth between men and women.
The second major hurricane of the 2004 Atlantic hurricane season.
How do they name hurricanes?
The United States began using female names to classify hurricanes in 1953 and started using male names as well in 1978. The names were used to simplify and better organize communications regarding the hurricanes.
That was the most informative that she ever was.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Echo.
Echo, what was the worst hurricane? Oh, she can't hear me. Ask her what the worst hurricane was in 2004.
Echo, what was the worst hurricane in 2004?
The most expensive 2004 hurricane by inflation-adjusted damage is Hurricane Ivan at $33,761,000,000.
She's going by money. Because that's all Amazon knows, is money. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Jeff Bezos.
You're calling out Jeff Bezos on her podcast? Hey, Jeff Bezos, send
all
us a
houseboat.
All you
care about is money.
We would like some gifts.
I just bought an Echo Fire Stick.
I'm going to send you a list.
No, we were supposed to...
I think you're asking about Fire Stick.
No, I'm not.
Would you like to know more about that?
No, thank you.
Oh, of course she heard Fire Stick.
No, we were supposed to boycott because of the conditions in the factories.
Which factory?
I think you're asking about Fire Stick.
No, Echo,
no!
Stop it.
Oh,
stop
Echo.
It.
Wow.
Gosh.
The second generation Fire TV Stick.
Echo, stop it. Why is she doing this?
That's because you talked about an Amazon product. That was intense. She would not let it go. She's like, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to barrel right through this. I hear the stop, but I'm ignoring it. I don't hear the stop.
She is the Democratic Party people when they call me and I happen to answer the phone. And I'm like, no, I'm so broke right now. No, I have credit card debt. I understand, but just like a few dollars. No, I'm sorry. I really can't. I have no money. I understand, but just this much. All you could do is this much. I'm like,
nope. No, they just keep
going.
I'm
sorry. I can't right now. And then they just can't. They won't stop. And that's how she is. She's a sales lady.
Yeah, she is. She wants you to buy it. Yeah. Second generation.
Yeah. Anyways, so sorry. I really should have boycotted. I'm sorry. I really missed the boat on that. I didn't find out until later. It was too late.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Now I have to look it up, and I'm going to get all sad, and I'm going to have to cancel.
No, like, the workers don't like the conditions in the factories and stuff. So they were supposed to boycott Prime Day.
No, I didn't get anything for Prime Day.
I just got the Fire Stick because it was $14.
What does it do?
It's like a Roku.
Oh. All right.
But it's voice activated, so I can tell it to put on King of the Hill. It just puts on King of the Hill.
But you won't have King of the Hill because you're canceling your cable.
Well, King of the Hill is on Hulu. So it'll play Hulu, it'll play Netflix, it'll play, I can say, play Murder, She Wrote, and it goes to Amazon Prime, and it plays Murder, She Wrote. The whole series.
Clever. All right.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. I'm really going to miss my cable. And yelling about that Smile Direct guy that pisses me off. So okay.
Yeah.
I'm ending the episode on such a high note, mm-hmm. if I could speak English. So the hurricane comes, devastation reigned, Man saw his future dripping down the drain. Wow, I was not expecting to do that. Just, it came right out.
Was that Hamilton?
That was Hamilton. And when the lights came back on, Jim was literally gone with the wind.
Dun, dun, dun.
He's gone, y'all.
That's good.
And Gene is probably very sad.
You guys aren't ready because it gets even crazier.
What is
part two?
Gene gets somehow stupider in part two.
Yeah, but then she wises up.
Does
later,
she?
Briefly, for like a second, and then everything gets better. Yeah, she does. When Gene wises up is when things start to like, okay.
But the reason Gene wises up is BS and part of her whole
correct.
Problem.
Correct.
Her whole internal right. situation, why she needs better help.
Yes, that is definitely true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this episode, we'd wanted to say happy birthday to a girl named Kate, who her it is different Kate, but she's equally awesome. I don't know how her Nancy Grace impression is, but her husband, Lauren.
Are you talking about me? Because my name's Ethel, so I don't know who
I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Her husband, Lauren, reached out to us and asked if we would say a shout out. He thinks that you are beautiful as hell, no matter what your age. No, he didn't say that. He said,
that
don't
so
say
sweet.
Her age. He said, don't say her age. We can say she's in her 30s and she's beautiful as hell.
And she's timeless.
Yeah. He loves
sorry,
her.
No, timeless sounds bad. That makes you sound like Elizabeth Taylor.
No,
like
she's Vaseline not lens. Old. She is in her 30s.
Yeah.
She
no,
is a young
you are a, you are spring chicken
and beautiful
apparently
as hell.
Beautiful as hell.
Yeah. They live in Colorado where the Secret Keepers took place.
No.
And not in the exact same place. I just mean oh. in Colorado. And oh. they started watching Bob's Burgers because we talk about it all the time. So
oh.
you're welcome, Kate. That's your birthday present.
That's great.
Yeah.
We can call her Kate Doesn't Need to Date. She has a husband.
I love it. It might not get picked up by TLC because there's not a lot of conflict there, but I still think it could be a good show.
Yeah, maybe she has an interesting job.
Yeah. Also, I did want to say we never do like serious things, but we did get reached out to by a listener named Emily, whose husband, Dustin, lost his sister in an accident by a drowsy driver. And since last week's episode was about a guy who fell asleep at the wheel 5 times and no one did anything, she thought we could do a little reminder to say, don't
yeah.
drive drunk, don't drive sleepy, don't drive while you're listening to us, because I might say pubic hair a lot and you might just drive off the road.
Oh, man. Don't drive when you're on that crazy pill. What's it, Ambien? No driving on Ambien.
Because you can't fight the pirates that are coming after you while you're
right.
driving. That's
yeah.
not, that doesn't
and
work.
That's not a gremlin on the road. That's a dot. It marks the line. Stop it.
A gremlin. I'm going to run over it right now. Yeah, so just drive carefully. That's all we're trying to say.
Yes, please. Be aware.
Yeah, and also, we're so sorry about
yeah,
your sister,
so sorry.
Dustin.
That's awful.
Terrible. 22 years ago, drowsy driving is apparently never goes out of style. So let's, you guys, we can do
no,
better.
No, you just don't think you're as tired as you are. And then you're like, no, I'll make it. And then
yeah.
that one time. Yeah.
Also, I'm going to be more diligent about.
Diligent.
I'm going to be more diligent, Jefferson.
And illegitimate.
About not being on my phone or like not like looking at the next show I want to listen to.
Good for you.
In don't honor of Shannon. That's what I'm
have it
do.
Ready to go. Have it ready to go when you leave.
Mm-hmm.
That's what playlist is for.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I like it. Is a gremlin the thing that the cute thing turns into a gremlin, or do they start as gremlins?
I've never seen it. Something happens when you feed them at night, but I
yeah,
don't know.
It's water, right?
They look really cute. I think they're maybe always gremlins, but then they just turn psycho.
I don't really think so. I think they start as a cute thing and then they turn into a gremlin.
You know those dolls that were psycho and would say scary things that they sold to children, but then they get angry? Furbies. You know the Furbies?
They look like Furbies.
But then some of the Furbies had these like demon genes in them and they would get psycho and they would scare your whole house and be screaming and crying and like someone was murdering them. And you'd have to like break them to get them to stop.
Yeah, that's not. That's a,
and they sold them to children.
Because that's. Well, Satan
yeah.
infiltrated KB Toys
mm-hmm.
in 19, whatever, 99.
No, this is current. This is the new Furbies do that.
And the old Furbies.
Oh, yeah. I guess they all did it. designers are just saying a little F you to all of us, right?
They're not of this world.
World?
Yeah, they need to... Okay, it's called a Mogwai. Mogwai. And then they must turn into gremlin if you feed them or wet them?
I'm sorry, wet them? Like, pat them down with a damp paper towel?
Yep, that's what it says. Do not expose Mogwai to bright lights or sunlight, which will kill it. Do not let it come in contact with water, and never feed it after midnight.
They must smell. Do they never get bathed? Can you use a baby wipe?
I don't understand it.
I never saw it. I don't know where that came from, but let's try. Let's watch it.
All right.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Don't watch alone.
Oh, yeah.
Wait until our next episode to find out
who you can watch it with.
Exactly.
Here's a hint. Hot tip. It's not Jim Jeans.
Oh, Jim Jeans.
It might be Peggy. We're not saying. You'll have to tune in to find out.
Or is there another Bill coming? Yes, there is.
Or is there another
There's
Peggy?
There's another Bill in this episode.
Oh, there it is.
What is happening in this episode? Oh,
it's a lot. Okay, okay. Please watch it, too, so you know what's going on. Okay. Yeah.
Bye.
All right, bye. But baby. Oh.